I'm Peter Bonner McNess, and he is Chris Lang. And welcome to another of these regular property briefings. And a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, it's good to be back with you once again.
While earlier podcasts have looked at various skills investors need, I thought today we might explore the actual process of choosing a specific commercial property. Perhaps you'd like to give us a quick overview to start with?
Well, when you talk about analysing potential properties, you need to understand that it actually takes place over several phases. And as you'll recall, these fall within the first two steps of my investment formula. And it begins with filtering out your properties to arrive at your shortlist, and then a more detailed inspection before plugging all the information for each of your chosen properties into the final judgment software. Now, I have what I affectionately call my 25-2-1 rule. And the first phase is where you scour the market for potential opportunities, reviewing around 20 properties in a normal market. Now, unfortunately, in the current climate, you may only uncover only about 4 or 5. If you're lucky, you might get up closer to 10. And then you're entering the shortlisting phase where you would ideally end up with perhaps 5 properties, which you then put through a more thorough analysis. But again, in the current market, that may only be 1 or 2 properties that you feel are worthy of further investigation. And then you see how well they emerge from a detailed on-site inspection. And after that, the subject of your remaining 2 properties is through the final judgment software to determine which one will provide you with the best after-tax return. Finally, it's then you commence the negotiations to secure your ultimate choice. So in essence, that's the entire process, which would seem like a simple enough concept, and obviously it works to your best advantage in a buyer's market. But nonetheless, even in the current market, the principles and the ratios, if not the actual numbers, tend to remain pretty much intact despite your available opportunity starting to dry up, as is what is happening at the moment.
So let's go back to the beginning.
Well, in everything that you've learnt from me before, you realise that you have 8 key investment objectives that you're trying to meet. However, I won't go into them right now. Plus, there are also 12 buying criteria which determine how well each property meets each of your investment objectives. Therefore, you need a quick way to shortlist potential properties, but being able to do so requires an objective rather than a subjective approach. And that's when I originally developed my rating matrix, which has all your investment objectives listed across the top, your enduring value, ongoing cash flow, steady growth, etc. And then running down the left-hand side of your 12 buying criteria is where you rate each of these out of 10 as to how well the property appears to meet that particular criterion. Now, one of the drawbacks of this matrix was that you needed to be in front of your computer to make an assessment. And if you were out and about looking at properties, that presented an awkward logistical problem.
And to help with that, I think you've developed an app.
Well, that's correct. And I developed the High Return Filter app, which you can download for free onto your iPad or your iPhone to have it right in front of you while you're there at each property. And what amazes me is that some of my clients and I guess listeners here today haven't yet taken advantage of that easy-to-use tool when it comes to performing your initial analysis and prep work. Now, as you'll see, it includes the 12 buying criteria and confirms which of the objectives they actually fulfill. Plus, there are a couple of walkthrough videos included within the app to help explain everything, along with some handy props on the way through as you're trying to analyse the property. Now, the important thing is that you will be assessing each of your potential opportunities using logic and reason, and remove any emotion or subjectivity from your decision. And the yardstick I use here is that it requires a 70% score or better, otherwise the property simply doesn't even make it onto your shortlist.
So once you've arrived at your shortlist, what's the next step?
Well, this is where it comes down to the detailed inspection process, where you are confirming 8 key aspects. Now, these are different to the investment objectives, but the first one is initial appeal. Now, if you arrive at the property and you don't immediately warm to it, the chances are that not many potential tenants will either, if the current tenants were to leave at the end of their lease and you had to relet the property. Then you need to look at things like the financial aspects, you know, whether the tenant is paying market rental and is also doing this on time. In other words, his payment history. Furthermore, that the lease requires the tenant to pay all available outgoings. I say available because obviously it's a retail tenant. They're not going to be paying land tax. The next thing is your on-site amenities. And once again, would you find yourself attracted to a building as a result of what's being offered by things like the landscaping, the lifts, the nearby facilities for staff, whether it's public transport or cafes? In other words, is it a good environment both in the property and nearby with the facilities being offered? The next aspect to look at is what I call future flexibility. Now, this relates to being able to potentially subdivide the property down the track. Now, although you find quite often with smaller properties, this probably won't be possible. However, if you're buying a property for $1 million or more, that's something that you really need to consider. In other words, if the tenant were to leave, can you subdivide economically without losing space with passages and things like that? Can you easily subdivide the tenancy into at least one, maybe two smaller tenancies and therefore attract a wider market? But equally, not only from a letting point of view, can you create separate titles so that you might buy one title but end up with two or three separately? Now, you may never choose to sell off the titles individually, but it adds value immediately because the next purchaser knows that if they get caught, they can always sell off one or two of the titles. And this doesn't necessarily apply just to office buildings. It could equally apply to an industry property. And I know there was one I bought recently for a client which had three street frontages and 5 separate titles. So it's not only just offices. It's probably less likely with retail, although if you get a corner location with retail, you might be able to create 2 shops out of it. So the next aspect you need to look at is the quality of services. And this has to do with things like the air conditioning and the fire protection as to whether they're up to date, you know, the latest or in need of upgrading. If it's a larger property, you may well undertake a professional due diligence study. But at this early stage, you're simply making a visual judgment as to the existence and the standard, the observable standard of these types of services. And I mean, even looking at things like your ceiling tiles, I mean, if the building's old, maybe that the ceiling tiles are in an empirical measurement as opposed to a metric measurement. So therefore, if you have to replace one tile, that's very difficult. It could be very expensive to get the old imperial measurement tiles and may in fact require you to replace the whole of the ceiling tiles and air conditioning ducts and so forth. So that probably leads into the next one, which is the standard of finish. And the question here is, does everything look fresh and inviting? And you're looking at the items such as paintwork, carpet, and so on. Now, some leases will require the tenant to replace the carpet every 5 to 7 years. Now, you need to establish how old the carpet is, and depending when the lease falls due, will that replacement be during the period of the current lease? Because if the lease expires before they're required to replace the carpet, then it'll be your responsibility to make it as attractive as you can for the next tenant to, in fact, replace the carpet. So that's the thing you need to look at. Now, one of the first things I always like to do is inspect the bathrooms, because if an owner or developer is going to cut costs, that's where they're going to do it. So you can very quickly pick up things like the tiling, the taps, all these sort of amenities and things within the toilets and bathrooms. So that gives you a pretty, you know, back of the envelope appreciation of the quality of finish throughout the rest of the building. And therefore, as I said, if the tiling or basings are of a good standard, the chances are that the remainder of the building will also be up to a good standard. The next aspect you probably need to look at is ongoing management. Now, you can generally gauge whether the present owners and or their managing agents have been looking after the property well. And if that's not the case, it actually presents you with a good opportunity to favourably impress your tenant once you become the owner. Now, this will not only help ensure the tenant stays on, but can also lead to a healthy rent increase when your market review comes around. And the secret is to undertake some of these cosmetic items, which may relate to improving the office foyer if you own the whole building, or even if it's on your floor, the landscaping, just things that are going to have visual impact and give the impression to the tenant that you are a caring landlord. So if they haven't had much done for them over the period before your ownership, and suddenly you start to not throw money around, but just take an obvious interest and care about the building and therefore about them as your tenant, well, that puts them in a favourable frame of mind when the rent review comes up in 12, 15 months' time. And finally, I suppose, environmental issues. Now, what you're looking at here are things like asbestos, soil contamination, and so forth. Now, that's not generally an issue for most buildings, for modern buildings. It's still something you need to keep in mind. Plus, you also need to consider the energy rating of the building. However, unless you own the whole building, the entire building, this is not something you can do a great deal about. However, if the building is of an age that some of these things are an issue, you need to perhaps go, if you're buying, say, a suite or a floor within the building, you perhaps need to go back through the owner's corporation minutes of the meetings, find out what has or hasn't been done over the recent years, and whether there are any particular potential liabilities coming up going forward. So hopefully that gives you a pretty good idea as to how to undertake the initial shortlisting and then to verify what the sort of things that you've uncovered when you've decided it ought to be on the shortlist and when you physically go onto the property and start looking in a bit more detail.
Well, all of that does seem pretty logical.
Well, you're right, and it is, because it's all part of the 9-step formula that I share with my mentor group, and it's really designed to help ensure their success with commercial property.
Anyway, thanks again, Chris, for sharing that with us today.